Awesome. So it looks like we have our guests on the line. So pretty soon we're going to get started. So Curtis, are you here, brother?
I am here, brother.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm going to go ahead and do the introduction real quickly, and then we're going to jump right in and get started.
Excellent.
All right. All right. Greetings, everyone. Wholeness, balance, and vibrations to all. Welcome to the Truth Revealed Campaign, TRC. I am your host, Princeton Oluwale Martin Jr., better known as Palm J, who's dedicated to bringing you the most in truth. Please sit back or forward and get ready for the Truth Train ride. I know you can be anywhere in the world right now, but we greatly appreciate you stopping by to listen to us. If you are not a truth seeker, if you are a lover of lies, this podcast will not serve you any purpose whatsoever. However, the information revealed here may cause cognitive dissonance. If you are the lover of truth, please proceed, and it shall set you free. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have a very special, special boys and girls, he, she, they, them, all of our people all over the world. I have a very special, this person is not just a being. This person is an advanced being, all right? So this is not your everyday person that you see and that you have a conversation with walking down the street. This is an advanced being. So you're going to find out soon why I coined this individual to an advanced being and also the illuminated one. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and give a brief description of who I'm referring to. So please listen and pay close attention. This brother has written a book that I literally just have in my possession. And it's a very powerful book. This book is called The Power of Awareness, a spiritual guide for Black entrepreneurs. Now, let me preface this. This is not just a book for Black people or people of African descent. This book is for individuals who wish to regain their dominion over truth, justice, all right, and equal rights for all humanity. So I'm going to go in and just give you guys a brief background on who I am talking about. This brother, his name is Mr. Curtis, the Illuminated One David. He is the founder of the TUN, the Occult Network, and the founder and host of the Occult Science Radio. He has interviewed many of the biggest names in the esoteric genre, such as John Anthony West, Robert Bouval, Dr. Carmen Balter, Lon Milo Duquette, and many others. That's just to say the few. Curtis began his studies of the occult sciences at the tender age of 18, born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. After having experienced Christianity and Islam, his search for something more first led him to study silver mind control and the works of Dr. Nathaniel Brandon. After learning the truth about self-exclamation, I could no longer turn back to the world of organized, distorted doctrine. His studies then took him further into the work of Dr. Connie Swig and Aleister Crowley, as well as the comedic sciences. He then decided to share this knowledge with the world via the Occult Science Radio, which he launched in April of 2008. In the age of digital content, Curtis, the Illuminated One David, then wanted to take his knowledge of the occult sciences to the next level. and founded the Occult Network Incorporated. Quote, I will never forget the significance of Tun's mission due to the fact that the company was officially incorporated on June 25th, 2009. The same day as Michael Jackson's death, Curtis, the Illuminated One David, currently resides in New York City. So ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, him, she, them, they, I want to welcome this special, this advanced being, Mr. Curtis, the Illuminated One David. Welcome, Brother Curtis.
Thank you for having me here, brother, and I'm truly, truly humbled by that introduction, but I'm truly honored to be on your show. I like what you're doing. I've listened to some of your previous broadcasts, and I'm truly honored to be a part of your distinguished line of guests.
Curtis, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, bro.
Yes, I'm sorry about that. What's going on is when I try to put it on speaker for my Facebook Live audience to hear it, it kind of goes out. So I'm not going to allow them to hear it via speaker. I'm going to put my earphone back in so we can have this podcast conversation. So if they are curious or want to listen to it, they will just have to listen to it via the podcast so we won't get interrupted again.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, that's what happened. So this is for the podcast audience. So we're going to go ahead and just focus on that. And for those who are on the Facebook Live, they can always tune in via the podcast and listen to the audio through there. They're just seeing me right now, hearing me speak, but they can't hear you speak. But that's okay. We're just going to focus on the podcast audience.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yes, and I'm sorry for that interruption. I know you were in mid sentence, so that won't happen again.
Okay, yeah, I basically was saying, I really appreciate, and I'm honored to be on your show. I've listened to a previous podcast, and I'm very honored that you invited me to be a part of such a distinguished lineup of guests.
Yes.
Yeah, I look forward to being on your show several times more.
Definitely. You are going to be one of my main go-to individuals that I will be hopefully even having some co-host interviews with, especially with some other guests that I've actually found from your show, from the show that I was listening to via your podcast. So I would love to have you back more than one time because I know you have so much more to give than just this one appearance on this podcast. So yeah, definitely we're going to be collaborating a whole lot more if that's okay with you.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
Okay. Awesome. So if you will, Curtis, if you can just give us a background and just, you know, who you are. I know I've read your bio, but I just want the audience to get the word from your lips, from your mouth, telling them, you know, who you are. And just in general, how you even got into the occult sciences and where was your background previous to entering the occult sciences and the esoteric knowledge?
Not a problem. I was raised, my sisters and I, we were raised primarily by my grandmother, you know, who was from the islands, you know, the USVI to be exact, you know, and, you know, she was very deeply religious. And, you know, being raised in the church, you know, I've experienced Christianity as well as Islam.
Okay.
But, you know, as I was growing up, there was just something inside of me that said, this is not the way. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's so many things that just don't make sense. And, you know, so I did like many black people did back then, you know, in the 70s and the 80s. They went from Christianity to Islam.
Yes.
And thinking that they were doing something different. You know, they were just going from one form of organized, distorted doctrine to another.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I began studying Islam, you know, I pretty much had the same feelings that I had when I was in Christianity. Okay. And so there was just something inside of me that gravitated towards the arcane sciences, the esoteric sciences, if you will, and the law of attraction. And okay. So right about 17, 18 years old, you know, I discovered a book called The Laws of Success, you know, and Think and Grow Rich. Yeah. And then, I always hung out around a lot of bookstores. You know, we had a lot more bookstores back then. It's not like it is now where everything is internet. Back then, people actually read, you know.
Yeah.
And so, I began hanging out with some friends, you know, that were into the occult. And when they introduced me to Carl Jung, Aleister Crowley, you know, I really started gravitating towards Carl Jung, you know, and Jungian psychology, because one of the things I've learned, you know, in studying Jungian psychology and psychology in general, you know, in addition to studying the law of attraction, what I find going on today is that in many instances where the law of attraction is being taught, they're leaving out two things that are really short-circuiting people. What do I mean by that? Number one, they're not really teaching people how to really go inside of themselves and take care of what's running in the background. Okay, what do I mean by that? Let's use the...
Yes, Curtis, again, I apologize, man. This whole Facebook Live, I might have to just shut it down because it seems like it keeps interrupting our transmission.
Oh, I see. Whatever you do is favorable, brother.
Yeah. So we're going to give it another run. But I'm sorry, man. You were talking about your upbringing.
Okay, yes. You know, and, you know, as I went through Christianity, and Islam, I realized that Christianity and Islam, as it's being taught to the masses, mm-hmm. okay, is really not designed to unlock your consciousness. It's designed to arrest your consciousness. You know, that's the reason why I call it organized distorted doctrine. In order to study true Christianity, you know, one would have to study Gnosticism, okay? Yeah. And, you know, in order to study, you know, true Islam, you know, you would have to study Sufism. You have to go into the deeper aspects, the esoteric aspects that they definitely are not going to teach in today's churches and, you know, today's mosques, because... I look at it this way, when you look at the Institute of Religion or organized historic doctrine, it's just a little bit, you know, it's designed to keep people brainwashed, because people who become awakened, if you will, cannot be controlled. That's why, you know, that's why religious institutions are not taxed by the government, okay? Yeah. They're allowed to make money untaxed, unlike individuals and companies. Now, why is that? That's their reward for assisting the government, if you will, in keeping people deaf, dumb, and blind, okay? The minute you begin to put information out there that's going to awaken people, now you're gonna have to pay taxes. Okay, so, you know, it's all just a game. And so as I began to study the law of attraction, you know, the esoteric sciences and psychology, I noticed one thing, you know, that even exists today, you know, with law of attraction teachings. They're missing two things. You know, they're basically teaching people just to visualize what they want, you know, accept that they have it, and we'll go from there. But two things that are missing from today's law of attraction teachings. Number one, they're not acknowledging the fact that the reason why the law of attraction doesn't work for many people, one of two reasons, is that they're just like religion dealing on the surface. You know, they're just telling people to visualize. But what do I mean by they're just dealing on the surface? You have people who are trying to visualize things that they desire, but in the background, they have in the back of their mind, they have things that are possibly short-circuiting their manifestation. You know, let me use a computer as an example. When you turn on your computer and, you know, you turn on your screen, what you look at on the screen is what's on the surface. But now there are programs running in the background that if anything, if anything goes wrong in the background, then the computer is not going to operate at all. So how do I equate this to everyday people who try to work with the law of attraction? You may have someone who's trying to manifest wealth, but now they grew up in a family or they come from an environment where poverty was there was what they looked at every day, and so that was ingrained in their psyche. Or they may have grown up in a household where they were constantly being told that you're not going to amount to anything, okay, you're a failure, okay, you're a loser. So now if such individual doesn't go in and deal with those underlying beliefs, because deeply held beliefs and philosophies become self-fulfilling prophecies. Okay, so now if you don't go within and deal with these deeply held beliefs that are operating in the background, it's going to short circuit your manifestation. That's number one. Number two, much like religion as well, they don't really do any what I call is shadow work, dealing with the hidden self. What do I mean by that? In other words, they also taught that, you know, when you are visualizing, if any negative, quote unquote, negative feelings come up, you're supposed to just override them and keep visualizing. But then when you do things like that, then you're doing what's called repression. And anything that's repressed does not go away, it just grows stronger. So now, you know, we live in a world where we're taught to believe in positive, negative, black and white. But now these same thoughts, you know, thoughts are neither positive nor negative. They're just thoughts. So now those same thoughts that have been classified as negative, what the many law of attraction teachers are not teaching you is that those same quote unquote negative thoughts can also be the fuel to your manifestations. Because anytime you visualize something, you're always going to get its opposite equivalent. So now those so-called negative thoughts that you're being taught to override are basically your subconscious mind saying, okay, this is what you're visualizing, but now I'm showing you, I'm bringing to light from the back of your mind what's hindering you. So now if you're if you're visualizing for wealth and you keep hearing that voice in your head that's saying, oh, you're not good enough, you know, to have that mansion. You're not good enough to have that Rolls Royce. You're not good enough to have that $1 million. You see how the universe is always working in your favor? Yeah. When you visualize, that so-called negative thought is actually there to help you. In other words, the universe is saying that, okay, this is what you want. This is your desire. But now this is what's short-circuiting it. So now instead of overriding it, you open up to it. You listen to what it has to say. And then once you open up to it and you ride with it, instead of riding against it, now you've just turned that inner saboteur, okay, into an inner ally. But the reason, in other words, also that having grown up in religious households and all the brainwashing that we get from school, church, and you know, many other entities around us, we've been taught to repress our anger, repress our sadness, you know, repress not only the bad parts of us, but also the good parts of us. And we're taught to be humble. Being humble is one of the worst things that you can do, because when you become humble, being humble entails minimizing yourself, not maximizing yourself.
That's right.
And those people that...
Okay. Chris, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm here, brother.
Oh, man. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's going on. But I do know that there's some force that is trying to keep us from doing what we're doing right now. But you know what? I don't know how that could happen. We're going to keep going and we're going to give it another try. Maybe it's one of those nights. It's just, you know, hey, might have to just call it a night and try it again. But we have to give it all we got.
Well, brother, like I said, you know, I'm at your beck and call. Okay. So we'll try to keep this going. But you know, as I was
about being humble. You were talking about that whole humble aspect of people just being like docile. That humbleness is kind of like that docile mentality.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because you know, there's no way you can truly achieve greatness, okay, by being humble. Like, even when we look at public figures who have achieved great things, but yet they minimize themselves, they're basically placating others. You know, they're basically placating the audience, because even amongst successful people, you know, there's something called peer pressure. Yeah. And what I find with, in many instances, you know, people who've achieved great success, they tend to care too much about children of a lesser god, if you will. Those who are not as successful as them, they tend to care what they think. Okay, let's go back to the days with the late, great Muhammad Ali. Yeah. When he started calling himself the greatest, do you know how much flack he caught for that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. But one of the things that I admired about the great, late, great Muhammad Ali, he never allowed anyone to minimize him. And because he kept calling himself the greatest, okay, he was able to achieve great things. And eventually people got used to it. And so now the same people that were criticizing him grew to love him. See, what we have to realize is that we have to allow people to adjust to us. not us adjust to others. Because we live in a world where, you know, 80 to 90%, we have to realize that people are followers.
Yeah.
And that's why those that achieve greatness, okay, are very much in the minority, because many people don't have, because of brainwashing, don't have the courage to step away from the crowd, if you will, and walk their own path, because people are afraid of being alone.
Yeah.
People are afraid of criticism. What are other people going to think?
That's right.
Okay, what are other people going to say? Whereas those that achieve greatness, they don't give a damn what other people think. That's they don't give a damn, you know, about what other people say. So that was one of the things that I wanted to emphasize in my book, you know, that I've had out. The Power of Awareness, a spiritual guide for Black entrepreneurs based on the teachings of Neville Goddard. And I always have to specify to the community out there that, you know, even though in the title it says Black entrepreneurs, the message inside is universal. You know, that same book, you know, a non-Black person, you just recently purchased the book. And would you not agree that the same information that is in that book could also apply to entrepreneurs and people of other ethnic groups? Would you not agree?
Absolutely, Brother Curtis. Absolutely. Matter of fact, while we're there, I want to, if you don't mind, I want to actually read an excerpt from the book that I found just in illuminating. And I found that was something that anyone reading this passage could relate to. No matter where you're from, I don't care if you're from a different galaxy, I don't care if you're from a different dimension, you can literally see and feel this message. So I'm going to go and read it real quickly, Brother Curtis.
Please.
All right. So it says, creation is finished. Creativeness is only a deeper receptiveness for the entire content of all time and all space, while experience in a time sequence actually coexists in an infinite and eternal now. In other words, all that you ever have been or ever will be, in fact, all that mankind ever was or ever will be, exists now. This is what is meant by creation. And the statement that creation is finished means nothing is ever to be created. It is only to be manifested. What is called creativeness is only becoming aware of what already is. You simply become aware of increasing portion of that which already exists. The fact that you can never be anything that you are not already, or experience anything not already existing, explains the experience of having an acute feeling or having heard before what is being said, or having met before the person being met for the first time, or having seen before a place or thing being seen for the first time. Now, if you're not receiving that knowledge, that jewel, that diamond, then I don't know what frequency you're on, because that simply just puts you in a position of being the omnipotent, the omnipresent, the just is. Out of nowhere, you are just what you are. Damn, that was so deep, man. Thank you for that.
Yes, yeah. I mean, what, you know, that's one of the things that I find that every pastor leaves out in church. They refuse to teach that in the pulpit. It clearly says in the scriptures, for ye are gods.
Yeah.
Okay. And when, you know, what's being taught in many law of attraction circles is that you're not going to get what you want. You could only get what you are. What do I mean by that? Okay, that, you know, when we look at organized distorted doctrine, we're taught to pray to an entity outside of us. Okay, God is up in the sky and Satan is the bad guy in the ground. And in order for you to truly awaken, one must realize that there is no God in the sky. There is no bad guy in the ground. All exists within you.
That's right.
Okay, so now if you're praying to some outside God, dear Lord, please give me a brand new Cadillac. Okay, that's not how universal law operates. How does universal law operate? One must realize that, as it says in the scriptures, it is my Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. You know, I've already prepared a place for you. All you have to do is walk in it. What does that mean? In order for you to manifest, because as the scriptures say, okay, creation is finished. Anything that you can think of has already been created. All we do is manifest.
That's right.
And how do we manifest? Whatever it is that we desire, because the universe operates on feeling, on vibration.
Yes.
So now, in order to bring your desires out of that fourth dimension into the third dimension reality that we're currently existing, you have to become a vibrational match to it. In other words, what would the feeling be like if I had what I desired now? And once you tap into that feeling, okay, because whatever you're seeking is also seeking you.
Mm-hmm.
The universe always says yes. The universe never says no. So now whatever you desire, okay, I always put it this way. The creator wants you to have it more than you want it.
Yeah.
Okay? And with that, I've already given it to you. So now if you're praying, if you're asking me to give it to you, you're insinuating that you don't already have it. You have to know that you already have it.
That's right.
And so once you get into the vibration, and how do you get into that vibration? You ask yourself, this is what, first you have to know exactly what you want.
Yeah.
Okay. And then once you know what you want, ask yourself, what would I feel like if I had that now? Okay. In other words, if someone told you, I'm going to give you $10 million next week. Okay. The first thing that's going to come to your mind is, oh, wow, I have $10 million coming. So this is what I'm going to do with it. Your mind is going to start racing with the things that you plan on doing with it.
Okay.
Well, now it's the same thing with the law of manifestation. Okay, I like to call it the law of manifestation more so than the law of attraction. Because now you have to ride that feeling, know that I have it now. It just, because everything that you see has come from the unseen.
That's right.
See, that these physical eyes that we're looking out now, there's a difference between looking and seeing. See, when your eyes are physically open and you're looking out into the external world, you must know that the external world is nothing more than a mirror of the internal world.
That's right.
So the external world is a holographic world.
Yes.
Okay, it's not real. The real world is when you close your eyes. And I've always told people, close your eyes so you can see.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Okay, close your eyes. You could, the only way, especially within our community and when we look out into the world, a lot of people, when they want to make change, okay, they try to make changes externally. Okay, let's take a look at the Black community. Okay, when we look at what's going on, when look at the violence that has been committed against the Black community, and to a certain degree still being committed against the Black community. Yeah. A lot of that has come from, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you will, because of many of the atrocities that have been committed against people of color. It's given them, it's given us low self-esteem. And remember now, as I said earlier, deeply held beliefs and philosophies eventually become self-fulfilling prophecies. When you begin to see yourself as a victim, then that's what the universe will mirror back to you. Oh, you're a victim? So now I'm going to constantly give you situations where you're being victimized.
I'm going to constantly perpetuate your situation to your detriment. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now, instead of protesting, instead of, you know, instead of going in the streets and looting and rioting, if you wish to end your victimization, all you have to do is close your eyes and imagine and get the feeling of being a victor, not a victim.
That's right.
So as long as you're out there protesting, okay, you're constantly running to Congress, oh, to change things. As long as you are trying to make changes externally, then you're working against natural law. Because the external world is just a mirror of the internal world. So now when I look at this book, because, and we've talked about this in previous conversations, see, there's two types of victim mentality within the Black community. You know, there's the victim mentality that exists in the hood, if you will, amongst non-successful Blacks. I don't like to use the word poor, okay, because it seems so harsh. But then successful Blacks also have their version of defeatist mentality, victim mentality. What do I mean by that? There's two types of business measurements out here with regard to the corporations in America. On one hand, you have the Fortune 500, and on the other hand, you have the Black Enterprise 100s. Okay, the Black, the 100 largest Black-owned companies in America versus the 500 white-owned companies in America, if not the world. Now, tell me something. Why don't we see any Black-owned companies? If anything, there might be one or two. Why don't we see any Black-owned companies on the Fortune 500? Is it because of racism? Maybe. But maybe let's look at this a little deeper. Okay. If there is, if it is racism, okay, could it be a manifestation of the mentalities of Black business owners? What do I mean by that? When you look at the Black business owner versus the Fortune 500 company, you have two companies right now that came out in the media now, Apple and Amazon, that have just reached $1 trillion status. $1 trillion status. Okay, let's let that sink in for a while. $1 trillion is a lot of money. But now you have the Black business owner who may have a large company. But now with that Black business owner is saying, okay, I have a $500 million a year company. The white man is not going to allow my company to be as big as their company. And that's just not true. That's just not true. It's not the white man standing in your way. It's your own stinking thinking. Let me say that again. It's not the white man standing in the way. It's your own stinking thinking. It's your belief that the reason why Black companies have not reached the $1 trillion status thus far is because of that belief that there's an obstacle, there's an immovable obstacle in front of me, that being the white man. So now that belief has become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so until we realize that the greatest gift that we have been given is to create our own reality, okay, to create our own destiny, once we really, 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 once that really sinks into the depths of our soul, we'll realize that, oh, there is no white man out there holding me back. The reason why my company is not a $1 trillion company like Apple and Amazon is because of those beliefs that I said at the top of the broadcast that are operating in the background, that is short-circuiting a greater manifestation, if you will. So, you know, I know I give long answers, but I just wanted to pause to, you know, leave room for any further questions that you might have.
Yeah, no, man. When I'm hearing you speak, it's like music to my ears, because, and I'm just listening and I'm just enjoying the words that have been put together to explain your notion, because it makes so much sense. I can give you an example why I can literally see where you're going with this, because from my own personal life, for example, I remember going through immigration and trying to get my papers and get everything situated. And that victim mentality was like a crutch, knowing that, okay, we've been, you know, through our history, we've been having such a horrific male mistreatment from the society, from just us being here. But at the same time, it's like, okay, are we going to continue using that as a means of not achieving or getting towards or working towards what we know we should have? Or are we going to sit back and complain about it? What are we going to do about it? So for me, I remember continuously using that. Like, you know what? Oh man, I can't get this because they're not letting me do this, they're not letting me do that. But what it really was deep down was the fact that it was a convenient excuse. It was a convenient excuse to allow myself to not be proactive, to not be aggressive of trying to get this stuff resolved. But let me tell you something, Brother Curtis. Once I got active, once I got proactive, once I put that other, that humbleness aside, because that's what I was taught. I too was raised in a Christian background. I too was brought up from the programming of Christianity. So what we were always taught, I will never forget it. Oh, just be humble. Just wait. It will come to you. It will come to you. I'm like, and that was my programming for a long time. And being humble was also programming that I had for a long time. So I kept thinking, okay, let me just sit. Let me just wait. But while I was sitting and waiting, I was suffering. I was going through some hardships. I was going through some very difficult times. But once, Brother Curtis, once I took that shed and I took that weight off of saying, I'm going to be humble, I'm going to sit, and I'm going to wait. Once I went and was progressive, man, things start to change, because I physically, mentally, emotionally, psychologically put myself in the driver's seat to say, you know what? No longer am I going to sit around being humble. No longer am I going to sit around praying. No longer am I going to sit around and think this thing is just going to go away on its own. Just like if you look at and you see our society, especially being a person who was raised under a Christianity program, that, oh, this person, this entity, whoever it is, will come and they're going to save you from all your hardships and all this. And you keep sitting and keep waiting. That will never happen, because the person who really is supposed to go and get that work done, or go get this job, or go and get this whatever it is you're aiming for, or you want, you, that's the person that you're waiting for, the individual. That's the individual that got to go get it done. So if one keep waiting, and waiting and being humble and praying and all these defeated attitude and this mindset of I'm just gonna wait, you're not gonna get it done. But like I said, once I took that driver's seat and said, you know what, I'm no more, things changed for me, Brother Curtis. It changed drastically.
Absolutely. You, the one thing that we must internalize is that no one's coming to the rescue.
That's right.
No one's. And the thing that has really pacified many of us, especially in religion, Jesus is coming back to straighten all of this out.
Oh, my goodness. Say that again.
Okay. There's going to be a judgment day. Okay, where, you know, the book of Revelation, there's going to come a day where we're going to hear trumpets from the sky and Jesus is going to come riding out of the clouds and all the... No.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really appalling that here we are in 2019 and people are still believing that nonsense.
Yeah. People are staunch. Staunch. And you said the key word, and I want to highlight that key word. You said some other things too that I want to also highlight. One of them was praying. Praying is something that I've been looking deep into this, and I've been studying deep into it. And I always ask myself, and I ask others who pray. So what is the difference between a pray and praying? What's the difference between a prey and a praying? Like if I'm praying for something versus a predator preying on something. And you know what, Brother Curtis? A lot of people get stuck on that. They're like, what the heck did he just say? Oh my goodness, though, that is... And they come to the answer because there is no difference. It's spelled differently, yes, but it's still saying the same thing. Are you gonna be a prey to get preyed on? You see, and also when you look at, okay, I'm praying for this car, I'm praying for this gold, I'm praying for whatever, this wealth. You think you're the only one praying for this thing? There's millions of other people who are under that banner, under that program, that are also praying for the same thing. But you know what? It's about who is going to do what that prayer is asking. Because to ask for something, especially under those terms, you got to do something for it. Now, who are you doing it for? And who's telling you to do what? Because you can't just get what you're saying you want to get without hard work. If you think you're going to sit down and just say, I'm going to pray for this car, and you're going to get that car, then you're on a whole different plane. And that plane, you're going to be on by yourself and rest with the others who are on that same plane. But if you take that into your own self and go and get it done, that's a whole different story. So when the people are praying, they think they're the only one. I want that gold. I want that diamond. There are many others. But like I said, who are you praying to? And do you know what that person or that entity that you're praying to, do you know what they want? They want something in return. And if you're not willing to give that entity what they want in return, you're not going to get it. And if you do, then you're going to get it because you're serving this entity. But this entity is not who you really think it is, and you think it's this so-called God. And this God that you think it is not really who you think it is. So that is something that we can get into a little deeper down the road, but I just wanted to address that because that is something that a lot of people are not thinking about when they talk about praying.
Exactly. Because see, when you're praying in the conventional sense, you're giving away your power.
That's right.
Because you're giving away, you're relying on something that you believe is outside of you. To grant your desires. When you begin to, I won't say believe, but know.
There you go.
That know you are God.
That's it. That was my other point, but you just hit right there. You just hit it. That belief thing has been a crutch for a lot of folks. A lot of folks want to continue to believe. And when we continue to believe, I ask the question again. I beg the question to other folks who are always believers and want to believe. I say, okay, say we are believing. And there was a time that a lot of people believed, which was the Piscean era, right? The Piscean age, right?
Yes.
And that was the believer's age. That age has gone. It's gone. It's finished. It's over. So what age are we currently in? Some people say we're still moving into the Aquarius age, or we're still in the Aquarius age. So that, and if you can see and you can tell that we are in that age, because why? We got so much knowledge and so much free information that is flowing everywhere. So there's no need to believe anymore. There is more room for you to know because the information is right there in your face. Only if your eyes are trained enough and if you're seasoned enough to know what you're looking for, you can find an answer without even blinking an eye. So believing is something we all are victims of, and we have to drop it and start knowing and get in the know. So I'm glad you pointed that out, because that's what I wanted to talk about.
Absolutely. You know, because when you just merely believe, okay, belief implies doubt.
That's right.
Okay, it implies doubt. You must know.
Yes.
You know, and that's why I so love the teachings of Neville Goddard, mm-hmm. you know, as well as Reverend Ike and other teachers, because if you listen to their lectures, they're not teaching you to believe, they're teaching you to know. Okay, in other words, in order to bring that which I desire out of that fourth dimension into this third dimension, I have to know, because let's establish something right now. Everything that's seen came from the unseen.
That's right.
Okay, and we did. Okay, ask yourself, who and what were we before we entered our mother's womb and came out of her womb, and we were in this physical equipment that we are now? At one time, we were non-physical.
That's right.
Okay, so now, in order to bring that which you wish to manifest, not create, okay, because everything's already been created, that which you wish to manifest, you must become a vibrational match to it.
Yeah.
Okay, meaning that you must know, how would I feel, okay, this brand new Cadillac, how would I feel if it was parked in my garage right now? Okay, that's the feeling. In other words, don't think of it, think from it. How would a person who owns a brand new Cadillac think every day? What would their thoughts be? What would their conversation be like? How would they operate on a day-to-day basis? They certainly wouldn't be thinking and acting like someone, you know, who's looking to buy a car. They're going to be acting and thinking like someone who already owns that particular car.
That's right.
Okay, and you have to do this.
Vibration from the Truth Revealed Campaign, TRC. And this is your host, Palm J. Until such time, stay positive, keep balance, check negative, and keep your head on the swivel. Good day, good evening, good night, and see you.